The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
We go into a reading today. So, this is an interesting book that came out from something called the New Games Movement, which I have mentioned a few times in class, but just as a reminder, I think it was mostly in the 60s. How many of you kind of got that vibe while you were reading this? but it's interesting because, you know, it's written in this sort of like almost Hemingway-ish kind of, you know, short little sentences, short little declarative sentences about wellness and happiness and getting along with your community and stuff like that. But a lot of principles, at least in the chapter in today's reading, aren't actually all that different from what I've been teaching all semester long regarding game design and playtesting. If it's your job to actually make a game, what Bernie de Koven and some of his other colleagues, anyone's heard of the Whole Earth Catalog? Stuart Brand, was it?
Brand, yeah.
Yeah.
What was it?
Stuart, the Whole Earth Catalog.
Was the thing with like the parachutes?
Well, actually, that's a new game movement in particular, yeah. But it's kind of the same community of people who are just trying to find ways to, not only to find ways for people to get along with each other, but also things like where the parachutes, like taking military equipment and then turning them into things that you play with and stuff like that. So this was today's chapter has a lot of stuff about how people who are, you know, who don't necessarily see themselves as game makers can use some of the practices that we've been talking about in this class to basically change the way how they play games that they already play, or, you know, and in the process of that create new games. The New Games Movement, there's actually a new games book that is more about the kinds of games that you can play. It includes things like Parachute. If you've ever done that game where there's like two people back to back, you're sitting back to back, and then your job is to stand up, you know, I think without using your hands, is that right?
Or like you lock your arms.
Yeah. Also that game where like you everyone sort of gets into a tight circle, reaches in, grabs somebody else's hand, and the whole job is to untangle it, yeah. Stuff like that. You see that in schools a lot nowadays, as well as games like Parachute. And all that came from this New Games Movement. And again, it's a reaction to wars in Vietnam and I guess Korea. Am I getting my chronology wrong?
Korea, Vietnam.
Yeah. And, you know, just trying to say, how do we learn how to play with other people instead of fighting other people? But there are a couple of interesting ideas in here that I thought that were kind of unique to today's reading that we haven't necessarily addressed in class. Did anything leap out in changing the game?
Yeah. You talk a lot about ballroom rules.
Mm-hmm.
So taking something from another game and kind of putting it in your own and making it your own and get you over the hump of having to make up something completely new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of funny because the example that he talks about is kind of like switching, like borrowing a rule on the fly, right? There's like, you know, like from a different variant of the same game. But I think the same principle can actually be applied to a much wider range of things, like safety rules. You know, if say you're playing a game like tag or something like that, and you haven't necessarily marked out the boundaries of your game, but the game that you've played with your friends before decided that one of the boundaries was going to be the edge of that road, right? No one can run past that road. That's a fairly sensible safety rule. It'd be easy enough to just borrow a rule from that and just say, you know, just like that last game that we played, no one crosses that road, you know, for safety reasons.
Another one on this combat is really, really easy to just borrow systems from. Because, like, especially when, like, your game isn't necessarily about the whole combat,
mm-hmm.
mechanism, like, just not having to worry about like how the combat actually works, and just like we've borrowed a few different ones. Like we tried Risk, we tried Axis Analyze. Like we don't actually want to spend time on like developing a fair combat system. Mm-hmm. Just trying stuff out.
Sure. I mean, as game designers, you can certainly sort of be inspired by what other people have done. And then, of course, again, you're designing a game meant for somebody else to play, whereas what Bernie DeKolb is writing about is about changing a rule that you're about to play, or maybe even in the process of playing. Do you have a hand up, Leah?
I just find it interesting how you distinguish between rules that sort of help players play the game as it is right now, and then rules that actually change the strategy that you have to use
in the game. Right, so there are rules that sort of clarify what it is that you can or you cannot do, right? You know, and then there are rules where which he explicitly states as one of as the definition of a change game, right? It's one that requires you to come up with a new strategy. So things like that safety rule that I described earlier doesn't necessarily fit that, but it fulfills other purposes, like, you know, being able to play well, giving you this feeling of wellness. I can't believe that line, but it's great. but then there's also rules like we're going to change the game because it's not challenging given the way how it's currently played. Maybe this current set of rules has a simple exploit, you know, that just leads to one person winning all the time. Maybe someone's just way more skilled at this game than somebody else, or, you know, you're playing with a 5-year-old or something like that, and, you know, you want to have some challenge. You want to keep some challenge for the kid, but if you just stick with the rules right now, you know, the kid will be endlessly challenged and then will not ever be able to win, and then you're not being challenged at all. And that's where you give yourself, and he brings this up, how do you, what's the thing you introduce into the game to be able to rebalance that? You should know it, even if you didn't read the rule. If you're playing with somebody who is way less skilled than you, you give yourself a handicap. Yeah, so handicapping is a really interesting concept regarding game balance. Because normally when we think about game balance, it's all about, you know, how do we think of the rules so that if everybody's kind of equally skilled, everyone kind of has a fair chance of winning, a decent chance, maybe not 50%, even chance of winning, but at least a fair chance of winning. But he's introducing the concept of handicapping as a way to be able to reintroduce challenge in a situation where players are not equally skilled, because of physical reasons, because of expertise, of familiarity with the game, that sort of thing. So let me see. Yeah, anything else that people remember from the reading? A lot of the stuff, there's an interesting little bit that he talks about cheating as a thing that players should be trying to do if you are already in the mood to be able to then suggest rule changes to the rest of the community. And you should be finding the loopholes, right? You should be trying to figure out where, given the current set of rules that you're playing right now, what are the problems with that set of rules and how do you improve on them? And the way how you figure out whether these rules are important or well-written or problematic is you try to break them. And then if you break them and then you realize that, oh, okay, that rule was really necessary in order for the game to play, but your attitude is, I want to continue playing with all of you, then you say, all right, you know, we're not going to do that anymore. I think it takes a tremendous amount of trust among players to be able to accommodate that. I don't know how many people actually play regularly in environments like that.
Saying that you should be trying, you should be trying to achieve the rules of programming.
That you should be trying to find the exploits. That you should be trying to figure out whether exactly how ironclad this rule actually is, right? Or whether this rule is a good idea in the first place. By breaking them. It's very, very it's a very, very interesting suggestion. I can't recall of a situation where I've been in a play community, as he describes it, where there's enough trust to be able to let people get away with that.
Honestly, I think it's just less interesting. I think it's more interesting. Like, one of the, I forget who said this, this is like a quote, it's like, creativity actually comes from constraints. I think it's a lot more interesting to actually try to find the broken strategies in a, like, in, yeah, as the game as it is.
Okay, to find the sort of degenerate strategies within the rules as opposed to figure out whether rules are broken. Okay. Yeah.
So sometimes it's like, playtesting, you obviously like change the rules, you know, right? But sometimes when playing games, you're like, how do we change the rules? But I feel like every time I've done that with other people, it's always been important to everyone that like everyone knows what the rules are and sticks to the rules.
And that's one thing that he very, very clearly states.
Oh.
It's like you are cheating publicly. You are broadcasting the fact that you're cheating, which brings up the question, are you really cheating or are you just proposing a rules change? Right? But the idea of treating the rules as something that could be malleable, I think, is what he's really getting at. He just decides to use the word cheating, which I'm not entirely sure whether that's the right word to describe it.
To me, it seems sort of similar to sort of the spades idea of sort of wanting to get at like what's underneath the game. So if you like start breaking a rule, and you're doing it publicly with the knowledge of other people, just to see what happens if we start to break this rule, I think you can get into some interesting issues of like, well, what makes the game tick? And like, I don't know, I feel like a lot of games I used to play as a kid, we would like explicitly break the rules. Like we would know as a rule of the game, but we would choose to either not play with it or to, oh, you know, this resource is limited. It's like, well, you know, this time when we play it, it's not going to be. Let's just see what happens.
Right. Yeah, and that's the attitude that he's trying to encourage.
I feel like if you're like, for whatever purpose you're playing a game, like if you're playing to win or if you're playing just for fun or something, players are like too keen to change the rules when they don't suit them, I think.
Players are.
If you're just like not very good at a game or you run into some sort of obstacle or strategy that you can't really overcome, I think players like in general jump to changing the rules too frequently.
Too frequently?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's dig into that. Why too frequently? Why do you feel that happens too often?
Just because I think, like, I'm thinking along the lines of competitive games here, just because players are, like, apt to blame other people besides themselves.
Oh, okay.
In general.
But what if you were trying to change the rules for other people?
I think, like, that sort of thing requires, like, a really in-depth understanding of, like, all the strategies of the rules.
Well, say I'm in a, you know, I don't know, fighting game tournament or something like that, and where, you know, usually the rules are, you know, pretty rigidly enforced, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not like a top level player. I just happen to be like on a real winning streak among people that I know.
Yeah.
And I don't seem to be able to lose right now. So I think what Bernie is talking about is describing a situation where, especially if you're that person who seems to be on a winning streak, you might want to suggest a rule change to be able to bring the challenge back to you, right? I've seen players do this, specifically in arcades, where it's like, I'm going to pick the character that I'm crappiest at because I can't seem to be able to lose by playing the characters that I'm actually good at. And that's no longer interesting for me. Yeah.
Usually I try doing like rules changes to like, oh, what's games I play like it? And sort of like hung up with it. I'm calling it cheating.
Yeah.
Because for me, cheating implies that you are not me changing the rules.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone agrees on the rules, but on a rules change, then it's not. Then you have changed the rules. You are now playing by a different set of rules. If you play by those, you're not cheating because you're not playing by the original.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like cheating is anything you are breaking the set of rules that was agreed upon.
Mm-hmm. Well, and cheating also, I think, has a certain assumption that everybody else is not breaking the rules, right? No one's playing with a different set of rules but you, or
yes.
But the cheat. In fact, a lot of cheats only work if everyone else sticks to the rules as written, and then you're the only one cheating. So again, I think he's trying to get across the attitude, but he used the wrong word for it. By
so,
describing it as cheap.
You brought up the example of like fighting games, like
mm-hmm.
picking a character like that you're not very good at.
Yep.
That's not even a rule change, in my opinion.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess. I'm trying to sort of think of like the implicit, maybe not a rules change, but it's more of a like a values change that you should be playing to win.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you can make a rule that, like, okay, normally everyone can choose whatever character they want, but
sure,
you're so much better than us that when you play in our play group, I choose your character.
Oh yeah,
right?
You
so
get to choose my
sides.
Character or something like that. You know, like, you tell me who you want to play against, and I'll try my best to play that game. Yeah. Let's start it with Mikhail and then over Laura. Yeah.
So one thing I wanted to bring up was, you're saying if like one person isn't being challenged enough,
mm-hmm,
then they can like start experimenting. But in my experience, this more often happens when the entire group is not being challenged anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So in the sense of like, you've just played Catan 3 times over the last like few days, and you're kind of like tired of Catan, but you don't really, like, you're kind of ready to do something else,
mm-hmm,
but like, you don't have a different board game with you right now or something,
right?
Right?
So let's,
so
let's
like
make a variant, sure.
Different variants up, and then it's like, kind of everyone is trying to increase the challenge, not because it's not challenging, like, there's still like, it's still like not clear who's going to win if you all sit down and start playing, but like, it's not challenging in the sense that it's not engaging and not interesting.
I think the reason why it's easier to do it when there's a lot of people kind of like starting to find a game uninteresting is because it's easier to get consensus to be able to enforce a change of the rules, right? It's a lot harder to say, you know, say I'm 12 and I'm playing with a whole bunch of other 12-year-olds and it happens to be a 9-year-old in the group and we're playing soccer or something like that. It's harder for anyone to convince the rest of the 12-year-olds to take it easy on a 9-year-old. Like, all right, what if we, you know, give an extra player on the 9-year-old team or something like that. So, which is not to say it can't be done, but and I think that's what Bernie DeKoven is saying. No, you should be able to do that sort of thing. Even, you know, and it's kind of like makes the game more interesting for everybody, not just for the person who's having a hard time. It makes the game more interesting, even for the people who have an advantage, because now it makes it a big, more of a fight, I guess, to for them to be able to win. Laura?
Well, I think like the other issue I have with the word like cheating to describe, you know, like changing the rules, and like less so I guess for individual players, but like I know for example there are games that I've played since I was really little where it wasn't really intentional that we're not playing by the original rule set.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that like when I was like 7 and I like learned how to play, you know, Monopoly or Clue or some really like generic board game that I learned when I was really little, I did not sit through all the rules, or I thought I knew the rules and like didn't really remember them. And so like you end up changing the rules unintentionally, and I think that's like a very different category.
Yeah, house rules.
Your house rules become so much different that like even if like you play with other people and you're kind of all playing by your own house rules,
mm-hmm,
it doesn't really feel like I wouldn't always call that cheating, because it's not because you're not trying to play by the correct.
Right.
Really,
and more importantly, everybody in the rooms agreed to that set of this new set of rules, right? So cheating is again not a great word to be able to describe that.
I feel like when you're modifying rules, there's sort of two different ways to do it. There's like sometimes you just like add rules to a game. You're just like, it's not interesting enough. Like, what? Let's like make up some additional variants to make this sort of more to like have more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And other times what you're doing is just sort of fixing something is,
yeah,
often what you consider fixing something. So like I know when I play the Cities and Knights of Catan, when the friends there, we nerf the aqueducts because it's like,
mm,
it's we nerf the aqueducts, and because it's really overpowered if you just like, it's really overpowered strategy to go for. And like sometimes you do it. Some groups are like a lot more or less willing to do it with certain number of tries. Like, what they're gonna play Catan if they took a lot of tries before they're finally willing to like nerf an extremely overpowered strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And like a different game I've played, Nations, after playing it like twice, we've nerfed one leader in there that we've seen twice because he's ridiculously overpowered.
Right.
And so because he's also overpowered. So it's sort of different groups sort of demand different levels of effort, like.
Mm-hmm.
But I
think in the end, Bernie DeKoven's kind of coming from a sort of you should be free to challenge authority. You know, I mean that's kind of like the implicit thing that you get from the whole catalog.
What
as well.
About is like going back to what Nathan said, like people are like sometimes too keen.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like something might seem initially overpowered, and then you play it like you might be, like, after the first game, like, everybody's just like, oh, yeah, it's broken, might as well just change it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you'd, like, played another game, you might have realized, oh, wait, you can actually counter this, like, by just doing X.
So, actually, a really interesting counterpoint, which is not part of our reading, is Dave Serlin, who is a MIT alum, actually, who wrote a book called Playing to Win. This is not part of our class reading, but he will definitely back that up, right? His is like, no, it's everyone's responsibility to play as hard as they can, because you haven't, especially for certain kinds of games, you haven't discovered everything that that your game systems are capable of. And if somebody can beat you playing that same game with the same set of rules, then clearly it's possible to beat that player, or at least get up to the point where you're equally skilled. So now there's a whole bunch of game design philosophies that come out of that as well. And I believe do we play Yomi in this class before?
We used to.
Actually, there's an iPad version of it now. It's definitely not an iPhone version, because it's way too much text to fit on iPhone screen. But Yomi is a game that is a card game version of basically Street Fighter type fighting game. And it's all about, you know, anticipating what your players are what the other player is going to do, and if you manage to get it right, you can build up with combos and everything. But the whole idea of that, of everything that Dave Serlin's worked on, I believe he did the remix version of Street Fighter, which was came
the
out
HD
on
HD version.
Yeah, the HD remix versions. The whole idea of everything that he wrote about and everything that he makes is that these kinds of competitive games really should be more about how do you challenge yourself to improve better, and it's a lot less about the community around you. It's a lot more about you and the game system. So you are submitting yourself willingly to the authority of the game system, which of course game designers create. And then if there's anything that you should be challenging, you should be challenging your ability to be able to rise to the occasion, right?
Everyone should be doing it equally, right? Like,
yeah.
If the other person's arguing that, they're not giving you a good experience, they're letting you down.
Right. If they're not fighting as hard as you can, if you know, and even Bernie describes this, right? The whole idea is that what happens if you give somebody a chance to you know, it's like, I could have played this game optimally because I know this game so well and have beaten you to into the ground, but I'm just going to, like, instead of handicapping myself, which is a sort of public declaration that this is how I'm going to be doing it, I'm just not going to play optimally, then I think both Dave Serlin and Bernie DeKoven are actually in agreement. This is not a good way to play. Because the person who's getting who's getting the benefit of that feels cheated of the experience as well. Did I see? No.
So I think I counterpoint that oftentimes you can be playing sort of suboptimally with some sort of flag post there, right?
Mm.
So like in a game with some clearly defined strategy, you could sort of be going for some like strategy that you believe to be suboptimal because you want to experiment with this, and it could be obvious to the players that you are like, and it could be like. And you sort of are just, and sort of along the lines of, oh, you might not explore all the possibilities of the game there.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to try hard so you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, you're actually, like, working towards that purpose. If you do something like, you know, I'm going to, like, try this strategy that's probably bad, but, like, who knows? It might be good.
You know, I do that a lot, and I always feel compelled to publicly declare that this is what I'm doing. I think because I don't want anyone to think that I'm stupid, it's like, I'm going to do something bad, and I think might be good.
For doing that.
Yeah.
A lot of times when I play a board game, I play with people who are, like, really, really good at just, like, understanding and, like, making board games, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I think that something might be an interesting way to play that game, I'll, like, say it out, and then
mm-hmm.
it becomes actually more of, like, a cooperative, like, how could this strategy have been?
Let's play this out and see what happens,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Also,
like,
it's a learning experience,
like,
for everyone.
Well, what would you have done from my shoot? Like, at this point, we're not even playing the win, we're playing the developer strategy.
Yeah,
I was basically just going to say what Damon said. Like, you're not necessarily playing to maximize your fun right now. You're playing to, like, sort of explore the state space that the game has.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe find, like, a bigger strategical key
mm-hmm.
later on, I guess.
And I think that's in keeping with what Bernie is trying to write about. It's like you are he ends up the chapter by talking about how you're scoring, right? How you're deciding what win is a win is. And in this particular case, this situation that we're describing, a win is learning how a new untested strategy is going to play out. It's like it becomes less about, you know, who is the individual who's actually winning, and more about are we getting something new from our understanding of this game, which can be, you know, really entertaining. Whereas I think Dave Serlin's not quite so willing to let that go. He's a little bit more adamant that no, you should just be winning based on the definition of the rule set, not based on some sort of like extra community arrived decision. And Bernie DeKoven's trying to fight for no, community determined win conditions are fine. In fact, you know, and there are many good reasons for you to go for that. Different points of view. This I'm not saying that anyone is there. I'm just saying that it's out there. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I will agree. If you're a professional player who is in a team, you're probably going to be working with your teammates a lot of the time, not to determine who's better at the game, but to try to make everybody else play better, right?
Yeah.
And there's just two different perspectives on how you arrive at that. One is to play as hard as you always can, always play as hard as you can, so that everyone has to sort of rise to the occasion. And the other way is just, no, it's okay to do things like experiments. It's okay to do things like handicaps. It's okay to do things like I'm just going to play. I was playing a game just recently where like I'm going to do a suboptimal strategy on purpose just to see whether my opponent is capable of fighting it off, because it's just ridiculous. So yeah, I had fun, even though I didn't win. So today, I was thinking I'm going through three games. But what time is it now? It's almost three. Okay, so I think we're going to do two games, but I'm going to very quickly have a discussion about what are all the different versions of Mafia that people have played. How many of you have played a version of Mafia or Werewolf or something like that? No? You haven't played?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me quickly give a description. The general framework of these games is everybody gets a card, and the card gives you a role. These are usually just regular playing cards where, you know, one version that I've played is that if you have a king or a queen or a jack of clubs, you are mafia. And it's your job is to kill everybody else who didn't receive a king, queen, or jack of clubs. And then the everybody else is a villager whose job is to figure out who are the mafia players. So everyone closes their eyes and opens their eyes based on the cues of a person who is like a moderator. You know, if I ran the game here in class, I'd be the moderator, and I say like nighttime, everyone closes their eyes, mafia awakes, and then the mafia do not say anything, but they can communicate with things like gestures and moving their head, and they are basically sort of using body language to vote on who dies that night, and they, you know, usually by nodding or by pointing or something like that. And then everyone closes their eyes, the moderator declares who dies, everyone opens their eyes again, and that person reveals their card, and that shows whether they were mafia or not. And the whole idea is that in between rounds, everyone speaks freely. And so the accusations that are flying around, and suspicions and exchanging of very, very tangential evidence. Like, I thought I heard rustling over there, you know? And it's like, you know, that could be the mafia person just trying to throw you off the track. That could be somebody who is actually the villager. Only the mafia know who for sure, who's who. And then there are other hidden roles. So what are some other variants that you've played? Yeah, I'm just having a challenge.
So I've played where the card doesn't get revealed when you die.
Oh, yeah.
Sorts of different roles,
mm-hmm.
as well, and the voting mechanic,
mm-hmm.
for who gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen it played where everyone where like people decide when the discussion is over, and then they literally vote,
mm-hmm.
and just the person who has majority gets killed.
They vote by pointing.
Yeah. But the way that I always play is that all it takes to put someone on the block is to have someone say, I'm putting that person on the block, and another person say, seconded.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, until a vote happens, you can't put anyone else on the block. So either everyone will vote and will say, like, okay, this person, and like a majority will result in a kill, or at which point it's knight instantly, and like that's that day.
Mm-hmm.
Or they fail to kill that person, and then people can feel free to like put up more people, to just point out another person and say like, no, I'm not going to do that.
You had your hand up.
Yeah.
Is it?
The two most basic roles, in addition to like mafia and villager, that I've seen pretty much every game, is the medic and the detective. Where the medic, every night gets to point at someone, and if the mafia were trying to hit that person stays alive.
Mm-hmm.
The detective, every night, gets to like basically point at someone while everyone else is sleeping, and the moderator will like either nod his head saying yes, he's mafia, or no, he's not.
Yeah.
So, I have sort of been a veteran of mafia that's at MIT. Mostly in like Grand Mara, called Live, we have Live Action Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And the way this works is one day is one day. So like often they do the forming for like Mafia lasts one day at a time, but so this version, to Mafia, you can kill someone once per day
mm-hmm.
by tapping them on the shoulder and saying bang. And it's interesting because you obviously, like in this game, you shouldn't do this. If you're Mafia, you shouldn't kill someone in front of other Mafia players, because then
right.
they will see you kill that person and will tell everyone that you killed that person, and then you'll be lynched for it. It's an amazing game of, oftentimes it's, we try to figure out, like, we people, like, establish alibis, so they get friends to lie for them about where they were in that location there.
Mm-hmm.
In one of the games recently there, someone said, oh, I was working in my lab until, like, 4:30 or something, and then some emailed their partner, found out who the partner was in that lab, emailed their partner, and the partner said they got out at 4. And so, and the kill was at 4:15. That person was lynched successfully.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, there are like a number of special rules of towers, but like it's pretty interesting to have a game where like the focus is on actually like figuring out where people were, like on actually in, like the alibis basically.
One reason why that works well on the MIT campus is because it's a fairly small campus compared to other university campuses, even in Massachusetts. And even when you're off campus, you are often in a close proximity to a lot of other MIT people. Do people know who else is playing in this game? Like in the round of Live Action Mafia? Do you know who it is?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Occasionally there are some people that know each other there.
Okay.
Like, most there's random, there's people at East Campus, there's always people playing at, there's a fraternity across the river.
Mm-hmm.
In Brooklyn there, ET. When like a kill happened there, and so immediately everyone's trying to figure out who was on the MIT campus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like 10 minutes later, people were trying to figure out who couldn't have gotten back there in time.
Right. Yeah, it's nice because yeah, it helps you do the detective work.
I used to play, but I'm not friends with like a lot of, I guess, the people who were in the game. I just had a couple friends who always invited me to play. And so I usually get lynched pretty quickly because they'd just be like, we don't know this kid, let's just kill him off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually my biggest problem with Mafia, is like, even just the, like, you know, sit at the table and everything,
like,
it's like, there's no
real Mafia, we don't know you.
Yeah.
And so, like, what'll end up happening, at least on the first round, is like, John, you look suspicious. I think John's Mafia. Everyone, vote yes. And then everyone votes yes and he dies and he's sitting there like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
So,
sorry.
I was going to say that a couple of interesting variants I've played with are like, where you have things like the fool, where his job is to try and get killed as mafia, or like an innocent, where like if the town accidentally kills them, then they just like automatically lose, things like that.
I think the most confusing variant is the Sarama game, where they had Mafia, the medic, the detective. Then they also had, I think, the serial killer who was supposed to be the last person standing, and they won. There was an arsonist, I can't remember his goal. Then there was a transporter who could, if they could switch targets, so like if the Mafia picked one person, and the transporter hadn't been picked by other persons, they could switch the Mafia's target. And then there was the seer who could talk to dead people.
who specifies who specifies the rules? Is it just like was a stable set of rules on an online server, or is it like every round has a different set of checkboxes?
I think how it worked is that you could choose what type of game that you want.
I see. So you're setting up a little lobby for this.
Yeah.
Okay, I see. Okay.
One of the funny ones that I played like that, there's one that looks like called Epic Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually like imbalanced, but it's still fun. It's a crazy cop who always, so there are basically three cops in a mafia, and the cops don't know which cop they are. There's a crazy cop who always gets everything inverted. There's a regular cop, and then there's a cop who like always sees everything as truthful, or always sees everything as like not, or like sorry, everything is innocent, or everything is not. I don't remember which. It's actually really unfair for the mafia member, because there's a meta where you just like say this is what I got, and then
mm-hmm.
someone dies, and then you say this is what I got, and then basically you just piece together who's lying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, so I was going to say, you were talking about crazy games, but I played a degenerate game where someone role-swapped God with one of the players, and God decided to allow this to proceed.
Wait, hold on.
Did God
someone,
there was
a role, someone who swapped people roles.
Okay.
So this person role-swapped God with one of the players.
Oh, okay.
What? Yeah, and so the God's role became a villager.
Okay.
The moderator became a villager, was like, the moderator's role was now a villager, and like one of the random villagers, like, their role was now God.
Okay.
And
you should just lynch God immediately.
And like, yes, and like this person, the person who is now the new God made a bet with the player who is the head of the mafia that they could live till the end of game. And like after smiting like 10 different people with this bet.
So the different aggregates of roles happen more or less like. Not by accident, but it's not like someone, it's not like they're standards. It's
right.
Like you get together with the group that's playing, and then you decide what roles there are. Or someone's like, oh, I thought about this beforehand, and I have some, like a setup I think would be really cool. So my brother once put together a setup like that, which had, I believe, 17 people, three of which were vanilla villagers, with, I'm not sure whether there was four or five different sides.
Mm-hmm. Factions.
So there are four or five different factions. So they were just playing, like, there's like Mafia, and then there's like werewolves, which are identical to Mafia and also get a kill at night.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the serial killer, who's bulletproof, so he can't get killed at night. And he was also a separate faction trying to kill everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the vigilante, who's like a good guy who also gets a kill at night. And so like this game like is actually it was actually like surprisingly very good because everyone basically had a role, so no one was like unhappy about that, and everyone was more or less tried to like and the game's quick because even though it's 17 people, you've got like four or five people dying every round for the first couple rounds. So I don't know.
I'm trying to figure out why there are so many variants of Mafia. It's there's something about Mafia or Werewolf or any of the names that people like, it seems to lend itself to people coming up with new variants and then adopting it. I mean, clearly it makes sense for, you need to be able to have a large group of people agree on the rules before it starts, so you know, I'm not so confused about that. I'm wondering why Mafia is.
One, it's really fast to play through,
mm-hmm.
which makes it very easy to play test.
Right.
And then two, it's also just like really, really easy to extend. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's you could always make your own role, but you honestly don't need to. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's at least 100 different roles you could just like eeny, meeny, miny, mo and like aggregate into a game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say that it's sort of more in for the villagers to just like sit there and just.
So there's a clear flaw in the game that every one of these variants is trying to address, which is make things a little bit more interesting for the possibilities. And I think the fact that it's very clear that all the rules are just like enforced by the people in the room, that there isn't a mafia tournament as far as I know. I guess you could have mafia tournaments spring up in the middle of conventions or something like that, but they don't seem to last very long. It's hard to imagine a version of Mafia where you aren't in direct contact with the person who established the rules for the round that you're playing right now. So it's very easy to just think that there's no canonical set of rules.
I was just gonna, I was reminded of something. There was this one time where there was a game of Mafia where God failed to give out any Mafia cards.
Oh.
So he cheated as far as that goes, and so God chose someone to kill every night and pretended that there was a Mafia doing it, and so like the group started at like, I don't remember, probably around 12 people, and like at around 5 people they were like, okay, this is impossible. As in, like, it is, like the previous vote, they were like, okay, if this happens, then blah, and if this happens, then blah. And then, like, they kill someone, and that person was, like, innocent, even though they had to be guilty in order for it to, like, make sense.
Right.
So they were like, what's going on?
I don't know, I think that's the sort of cheating that Bernie DeKoven's actually describing as, maybe we should try that once in a while, right?
I don't know, they were, like, pretty mad at the
project. I can imagine! Yeah, maybe that's the counter-argument. Yeah.
God again.
So I don't actually know what the game's called, but we call it Spy. Mm-hmm. It's basically there's a certain number of spies and a certain number of resistance players. It's very similar to Mafia.
Resistance.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a Mafia type game. Yeah. It's a boss.
Spies. It's like the opposite. it's very similar to Mafia, except that you have to pass a certain number of missions by putting people on the mission, and the spies try to fail them, and the Mafia is trying to pass them. The resistance is trying to pass them. And we did something very similar to that, where we had one of our friends left the room for a minute, and we go, okay guys, next round we're all spies, and we came up with like a pecking order for who does what at one time, and we all tried to like blame one kid for being spy the entire time. Then at the end, we managed to get to the point where everyone just voted for the only person that was not the spy to be the spy. So we basically just messed the game up to try and like accuse him and have fun with it.
Right.
But it kind of relates to that point of changing the rules.
And resistance is a little bit easier to identify that there is actually a set of rules, because resistance is a box product with a rule book in it. You know, so unlike a lot of other games of Raffia where you kind of think things are pretty malleable. I do want to move on to something else, but while I get the last couple of questions, if you have a smartphone, try downloading this. I think both Android and it's free on both the Android and the App Store. Because we're going to play a couple of rounds of this, if the Wi-Fi cooperates in this room, which it may not. Okay. Yep.
I really like Resistance because there's actual like public information,
mm-hmm.
Which means it's not just John's guilty; he's
right.
Dead now.
You don't just start the game by making stuff up.
Yeah.
Sure. Now, anybody who doesn't have a smartphone, you're welcome to use mine. Who would like it?
I was going to say something about resistance there.
Yeah, go ahead.
But yes, I have a chart of resistance.
Wait,
games.
Yeah, you.
And
you just why I was asking.
Although, actually, I'm going to get my iPad. I'll
Can you grab my phone? It's this one, right?
By Henry Smith?
Yeah, Henry Smith.
Oh, crap.
I
didn't realize anybody
was
that Wi-Fi. That's
what
I was wondering.
Like, no, it's not. Actually,
yeah.
I downloaded an
app
in like months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot mine.
I only have so many that I use.
Mine's actually
just
drive through a lot. Like, I grabbed it on the floor
like
5 times a day,
let's
say.
Which is
that one of those things?
Do you like pushing buttons and shouting at your friends? Do you like discharging clip just look?
It's playing. It's actually going to do this.
Yes, you know.
Of course,
that's
the number
of party games. You just have to show technical battle with each other. Just why might not lose it. You'll be assigned a random control panel with buttons, switches, sliders, files, all the time for the instructions. Instructions are being sent to your teammates, so you have to coordinate before the time is out. Also, the ship will play as
insane.
And your friends are out there exploding.
Also,
this is really cool.
Space Team is the game that I want to us to try to give a try, and we'll see if this works. If you are surrounded with people who have like the same kind of phone as yours, like Androids and iOS are like two separate things, you can't attempt to do it over Bluetooth.
It's just that you can play them.
I'm not
Wi-Fi. You can play Android and iPhone together.
Wi-Fi. If Wi-Fi works in this room.
No,
I have Wi-Fi.
And you can only do that with Resistance because Resistance is a fixed rule set. You can't do that with Mafia because every time you play Mafia, it's probably going to be a different rule.
Wait, does it actually matter which Wi-Fi network?
You could change the rules. Resistance is a game that's actually
Mafia was not a game that we wanted to play lots and lots of times.
Yeah.
Apparently, my phone doesn't like you.